Welcome back to Community Connections, and I have with me Cindy McLeish, our local MP, and she comes in once a month and we talk about what's going on in the local area. But first of all, Cindy, I just played that organ donation because you tell me it's organ donation week.
It's Donate Life Week, that's right, and that's why there's ads. People might see some posters around trying to lift the rate of organ donation in Australia.
It's pretty low in Victoria, isn't it?
Victoria is the lowest of all of the states. And as a result, there's a parliamentary inquiry. There's been a few inquiries having a look at it. But we've got a current parliamentary inquiry trying to look at some of the issues with organ donation and to try and lift it in Victoria.
Cindy, do you know why? I suppose it's pretty hard to ask when the inquiry's still going on as to why it is so low in Victoria.
Look, it's an interesting one because there's a whole bunch of different factors and there's a way that people hear about it and get on with it. One of the things that's been interesting, we've heard the number of volunteers has dropped post-COVID. Well, organ donors have also dropped post-COVID and you had a lot of issues with families not being able to get together and talk about it because you're only allowed to have one or two people in a hospital visiting, at some of those critical times when someone knows that their loved one's, really close
and
to the end.
And that's when you really need to discuss,
isn't
it?
Yeah, and you don't have the family in there because you're only allowed to have one or two people in there and it, became really quite difficult, more so in Victoria, but that's dropped all around the country. Other countries do a lot better than us, and South Australia do quite well. They've got theirs linked to the driver's licence.
Now, Cindy, is it true that a person can put themselves in as an organ donor and then when they pass away that the family can override that request?
Look, it happens.
Does it?
It does happen. And, one of the people that we've heard from said, there's a wish versus somebody's wish versus somebody registering on the organ donor register. Now, if you've registered on the register, the family are more likely to go with it. But if you haven't told anyone about it, so often people are dying and their family, they've never had the discussion. And so people are like, I don't know if they would have liked that or they wouldn't have liked that. Or sometimes they do, will say the ultimate consent is given by the family. So that's something that we're looking at.
Cindy, this is probably an impossible question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How do you get on if the person had a wish, we'll say, and then you get to that stage and we'll say there's two or four in the family and two say yep and two say no.
Yeah, look, that's something that they deal with. They've got practitioners in the hospitals that can have these conversations and deal with people, that are trained in this specific area because it is quite sensitive because people are often really stressed and it can be difficult. So this is why, everything's about encouraging people to understand up front what's happening.
So I guess the people who... If in the situation I've just mentioned, we'll say it's two or four or whatever, the ones that are for it are going to be really for it and the ones that are against it are going to be really against it, aren't they?
Yeah, and look, people don't understand often the process of what's involved. Yep. And so there's a lot of that unknown and certain community groups, they bring their attitudes from other countries as well. So if you've got other countries where they see people as harvesting body parts, for example, they're selling off, that they'll think very negatively of it. Or if you've got countries that have been pursuing this quite a while, but they say it takes about 10 years for people who move countries to kind of get on board with a lot of the systems and things. But there's lots of different types of donation as well.
Yeah. We'll talk about that in half a second. I guess the decision has to be made pretty quickly, doesn't it?
It does.
You can't mess around for a couple of days. The decision's almost got to be made on the spot, doesn't it?
The decisions do need to be made quickly. So if somebody, is in their last couple of days, you do have a little bit of time. But if somebody has been, tragically killed in a car accident or something like that, you do have you know, if somebody has a heart attack, for example, in a park and dies immediately, their organs can still be harvested a few hours later. But they've got these amazing little machines now called perfusion machines that means that they can remove an organ and keep it alive for a period of time, which means that absolute frantic rush trying to free up theatre time and the doctors and all that is taken away a little bit, because they could say, okay, this has happened, we can keep it alive for another 10 hours and then we can schedule it for 7 a.m. the transplant the next morning. And
it's unbelievable, isn't it?
It is. There's a lot of logistics, because if somebody dies in Tasmania or Mildura who's an organ donor and they're a match for Alan, and you know, there's things like the size of the lungs. Doesn't fit everybody. You know, like when you're talking about match, it's not just things that are going to be rejected. It's actually got to kind of fit in your body too. It's really quite extraordinary. And you know, how the whole process, because you need experts to go and retrieve them and then to bring them back and then to do the surgery. So there's a lot of, you know, to-ing and fro-ing.
So the inquiry that you're part of, what are you hoping to come out of that inquiry? To lift the numbers or what?
Yeah. And I think one of the doctors said yesterday, and this is all on the public record, you know, with because our hearings are televised, that this is only about transplants, that there's no other reason why people are donating organs. But you also have to have the systems and processes in place at the other end. So you're not saying that somebody who's got a great heart, that it can't get used because logistics get in the way. You know, you've got to kind of have it all flowing. But so there's organ, and we think of, you know, the heart, the lungs, the liver, kidneys, because kidneys can be taken out of a living person because you might donate a kidney to a child.
Yep.
But you have tissue. So, you know, the cartilage in your knee, for example, good strong cartilage. And when surgeons are doing replacements or things like that, that they'd prefer the real deal rather than something that's synthetic.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a whole lot of things and that people don't always realise. Skin, you know, that sounds a little bit funny, but when we had the New Zealand earthquake, and people were brought back here, there wasn't enough skin in a tissue bank, so they had to import it from America.
True.
So, you know, we really got to kind of lift our rates in Victoria.
Yeah. All right, we'll just take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Take a picture of tonight and keep it by your heart. Love has left its memories. There's no better way to part. I will find another love, someone who won't bring me down. How you tried to level me, but you never stood your ground. Fortunately, I got a wise this time. Fortunately, I got me on my mind. Take a piece of dignity and use it in your life. Even though you hurt me, I still want you to survive. Love was never special, we were never down. You will always have someone to bring you home the ground. Fortunately, I got a wife this time. Fortunately, I got me on my mind. Oh, I just wanna be loved. Don't wanna fight you, baby, but I'm much too proud to say it now. Don't wanna beg you, baby, but I'm much
99.1.
Welcome back to Community Connections. I have Cindy McLeish with us, our local MP, and we've been talking about Organ Donation Week. You'd like to talk about stem cells, Cindy.
That's right. We hear a little bit about stem cells. And, you know, there's also, you can be a stem cell donor. And it's kind of like the old bone marrow donor that, you know, we used to think about. Yeah. Only 50% of people have a family member who's compatible, which is really quite extraordinary because you usually hear if somebody needs what we used to call a bone marrow transplant, and it's different now, that you can rely on other people. You know, there's the stem cell bank. But you can determine somebody's compatibility through a cheek swab.
Can you?
So you can. And now, to be a donor, stem cell donor, it's not like the old lumbar punctures where it was exceptionally painful for the person donating. Yep. It's kind of like a two-hour blood donation process. So it's actually a lot easier. But what has been really extraordinary is that we don't have a lot of donors of stem cells in Australia, and we've had to rely on importing them from Germany.
Gee, that's not right, is it?
No, it just doesn't sound. It shouldn't be right. Apparently, a few people rely on Germany. I haven't got to the bottom of why Germany have got such an excess, but that they can do that. So, you know, we just need to make it easier because all of these things coming from overseas, and, you know, it just reduces the efficiency.
Well, and all takes time.
All takes time, you know, if we've got some of these things banked up. But, you know, with living organs, you don't have a lot of time to get things things moving. You know, things do need to be fairly quick, so.
And I guess there's nothing worse than having somebody that you think the doctors could have done something for to die just because there's no transplant available, is there?
Yeah, and sometimes that happens.
Sadly. You'd like to talk about the transplant games.
Well, that's right. So they have all sorts of things to celebrate, you know, the gift of life.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I remember when I was worked at golf, you know, we used to have the Open Heart Open. And the only way that you could participate in that golf tournament is you had open heart surgery. And but equally, you know, there's the transplant games. Yeah. And I heard a story, this fabulous story, about one of the guys who was participating, and he was 43 years post-kidney donation.
43 years?
Yeah. You know, extraordinary. So it does a few things. It gave him the gift of life. It allowed him not to be tied to a machine or dialysis.
So it gave him the quality of life, didn't it?
Gave him the quality of life. He could go back to work. He could participate as, you know, a regular member of society and participate in the transplant games. But this is what, you know, transplants and donations can do. Yep. It allows somebody to live a very full and great quality of life.
And that's probably something we need to sort of probably talk about a bit more, don't we? Because we talk about we need the donors, but we don't always talk the other side and say, hey, this is what that donation of life's going to do.
Correct. And the cost, the medical cost of dialysis and having people on dialysis, and more, you know, we've got the unit at Healesville now, and there's one down at Ringwood. Yep. Mansfield's got one and Seymour's got one. So, we're making it easier for people and to do at home. Yep. But by far the better outcome is, you know, you have the transplant. Now, transplants are pricey, but it's not anywhere near the long-term cost of having someone remain on dialysis.
Well, and I guess if someone's on dialysis every 24 hours or 48 hours, because I believe it's a fairly long process while you're on it, but I guess the downside of that is they can't hold a job, they can't do a lot in society, can they? Because they've got to be ready for dialysis.
Look, some people do it overnight.
Yeah.
And that, you know, certainly helps with that, but, you know, it can be tiring and you need people around you that, you know, can check on it, it's all okay. And some people can have, you know, a reasonable quality, but you still can't go away for like 48 hours. You have to kind of know where your machine is. But it's discussions to have with kids too, you know. You'd say, oh, look, you know, if Billy was really sick, would you like Billy to have a kidney or a new heart? And every kid is go, of course we would.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but it's getting people to not just be on the register, because if you're not on the register and there is that discussion as the time, you know, as it nears to the end, if people know your wishes, then that's, you know, a really great thing. So I just want people to think about it.
Something else that we should just mention, and then we'll move on to another subject. I had Bill Matthews in the new, you know, Bill Matthews, and he was saying that one of the, it's not a huge problem, but one of the problems is people often put it in their will but don't tell anyone. And he said he's had a number of occasions where they've come back to him later on and said, it was in Mum and Dad's will and we didn't read the will until a week after the burial.
Yeah.
So I guess that's...
Yeah, it's with the solicitor or somebody else has got it.
And they didn't know. And by that time it's just too late. So I guess that's just backing up what you're saying, that it should be the conversation as well. It's no good just saying, I'll put it in my will and they'll know what I want, because the will can be read much too late.
Yeah, absolutely much too late. Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. Really good point.
We'll take a quick break and be back with more. Cindy, you'd like to talk about the Sereny Centre up in Warburton.
That's right. A lot of people may know about the Sereny Centre or have heard of it a really long time ago and haven't given it another thought. And the Sereny Centre was through the Catholic Church, and it's on a little bit of land that is owned partly by the Education Department. It's back of the school and the Department of Transport, I think, or Council. Council might have a little bit, I think it is, with the road in. And then there's a bit of private property. It's kind of all in this bit of a messy spot and tricky to get into. But the building there, it's an old building, and I think it's, I don't know if it's octagonal or maybe, you know, a dodeca, a 12-sided, you know, it's an interesting shape. But a number of residents down there, and in particular the Warburton Advancement League, are really trying to progress it to help turn the tide of homelessness and to see if this building that has been unoccupied for a very long time, and now it's been boarded up, you know, to stop the vandalism and things like that, whether it can't be resurrected to really help turn the tide of homelessness at the moment.
Well, it's not much good if it's just sitting there vacant either, is it?
Well, this is the thing, you know, when you've got buildings, and I think it's got reasonable structural integrity, but it need to be fixed up quite a bit on the inside. So, you know, big congratulations there to the Advancement League for trying to progress this. But what they're doing is they're planning a community walk for Sunday the 13th of August, and that is National Homelessness Week.
Oh, yeah.
And the theme this year is It's Time to End Homelessness. And so they're trying to get a lot of people to walk with them. You know, I think it's going to be during the morning. That day is also Vietnam Veterans Day.
Oh,
and so I'll be at Healesville for the Vietnam Veterans service. So I won't be able to go to the walk. But, you know, those that aren't going to be involved in the veterans, you know, it would do something be really good, because there's, I've seen other examples, and I don't know if I've mentioned previously of what they did in Warragul with buildings that were on the retirement village that had been decommissioned years ago.
Right.
There were four, what had been four little units, like one bedroom and a living area and a separate laundry and a little bit of outside area, that one of the, in fact, he's now the local MP, but he was a builder, and they work with the homelessness organisation, the retirement village, to create short-term accommodation for women over 55. So it had to be over 55 to stay with the retirement village legislation.
Yep.
But he had, every man and his dog did freebies. You know, he did the building, somebody else did the plumbing, someone else did the wiring, went through and checked it all. They were getting, I can't remember if they had to, they had the paint donated, but they had to maybe pay painters, carpets and beds, and, you know, even the air conditioners. They got the air conditioners, the split systems at half price, and the Lions Club paid for other half, you know.
That's terrific, isn't it?
Yeah, really good. So, you know, I've seen this. They're just, the first person might be ready to come into them now, like literally now, you know, and because people are doing it for free, you can't crack the whip and say, hey, listen, if you don't have that done by the 28th of February, you're in strife, mate, we're not paying your bill. But, you know, but Warragul's a big town.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, and so we've got the Upper Yarra, and we've got a group of very dedicated people trying to have a look at some of the buildings that aren't being utilised, and whether or not that they can be used to help out with the homelessness. And I think that's a really great idea.
Cindy, how do people register, do you know, for the walk?
Look, I'll be certainly promoting it at the time, but I'm sure if you look at the Warburton Advancement League's website, they'll have some information about it as well.
Terrific. So that's on Sunday the 13th of August, and it's a walk.
And it's a walk, yes, and it'll be in and around Warburton.
Yep. All right, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Sweet dreams are made of the end.
Welcome back to Community Connections. Cindy, pardon me, you'd like to mention the passing of one of the CFA volunteers from Hoddles Creek.
Yeah, the captain, Leonie. And I think everybody was quite surprised to hear of, for what for me was a really quite sudden death a few days ago. She was terrific as a great advocate for the CFA and certainly for Hoddles Creek and to get things done.
I think I might have interviewed her, actually, come to think of it.
Oh, look, I'm sure she was a ripper. She was a real ripper, yeah. Leonie, and I know that will be an enormous loss to the brigade at Hoddles. And, you know, they've been advocating for a while to get a new station. It's been going on for donkeys, and she's, you know, been quite exasperated with that. But really, you know, with her full intent of making it better for the area and for the brigade, and so certainly with two of her husband and children, Brian, David and Brett, you know, we're certainly really thinking of them and those at the brigade. You know, I was, my office, we've all known her, we're all really quite saddened
by
that news. Very.
And I guess while we're talking about the CFA and not to put down her passing, but I guess they're always looking for volunteers, aren't they?
Absolutely, you know. And through the volunteers, the recruitments you'll get, you'll end up with somebody great like Leonie.
Yep.
You know, for everybody, there's a first time that they go in. And it's not too old. I was at one of the presentation nights at Yay not so long ago. Oh. And, you know, there were people who were new to the area and who were 60 who joined the brigade.
And of course it's not always, you don't have to be out on the fire front, do you?
No.
In the truck and sirens, there are plenty of other jobs in the background for people who maybe either don't want to or just...
Yeah, and some people who physically can't do the back of a truck thing, but they can very easily do a whole lot of the other more administrative stuff as well, and the comms and things like that. So always looking, you know, and we've had some, you know, rippers down here, and we've lost a few as well, but Leonie was one of the rippers that we've lost.
Yeah, that's bad. I'm sure I've interviewed her. Cindy, you'd like to talk about a local author. It's always good to talk about local people who have done something, isn't it?
It is. And Sandra's not been in Healesville, you know, like forever, but Sandra Tom-Jones is an adult who has grown up with autism. She's on the spectrum. And
she herself is on,
and she's worked in academia and different organisations. And she's authored a book about, it's called Growing Into Autism, and it's a guide on how to grow into what she says is an authentic, successful autistic life. And it's
terrific. So it's about her own life, is it?
She draws on a lot of her stories and experience, and she's got another couple of books in her as well. But one of the things that, and I've met her a couple of times, that she talked about was mentoring adults in the workplace who are on the spectrum, who have autism, and they can cope with a whole bunch of things, but there are other things that they can't cope with, you know, and that might be, you know, certainly going to an emergency department in a hospital or doing the supermarket shopping can be really, you know, the lights and the noises of people and things like that. So, you know, she draws on her own experiences, and her book's into its second run now, Growing Into Autism, and you go to any of the booksellers and you'll be able to pick it up. But I think one of the gaps that we see is in adults, and particularly, you know, we do a lot now with kids and thinking about kids and how to work with them, but sometimes their parents get diagnosed at the same time as them.
Yeah,
and it's much harder. You know, there's not all the support services
so
out
there.
They
haven't grown up with the support because they didn't realise it, or people didn't realise they had it. Is that what
they were kind of knew something was different.
Yeah.
But didn't exactly know what it was or how they were different. Couldn't put a, you know, pinpoint it, I guess. And I've met a lot of people who said that when their kids were diagnosed, they went, ah, that relates to me. And I think, you know, certainly for Sandra, when people read her book and some people go, now I understand myself better, or, you know, her husband or family members could read it and say, ah, now I know how to interact better and all of these sorts of things. So, look, you know, I encourage people to have a look, go if you've certainly got an interest in that area, growing into autism, because, you know, we also have a school that's really quite local here at Lyrebird College, which is down at Coldstream, which isn't terribly...
It's not that far away.
Not too far away. So, you know, we have some of those people around here that can help.
And I guess with a bit of luck, it'll help break down some of the stereotypes or, you know, where we sort of pigeonhole people, doesn't it? And you sort of say, oh, they can't do this or they can't do that. But then they can often do... I think what they do very well, don't they? Like what you're saying, that if they can't do something, then they can't. But if they can do it, I think they can do it very well.
There's... a million different types of, you know, I think the saying is, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism, because it's not the same as the next person or the next person.
Yep.
And there's, you know, you've got at one extreme, you've got those who are nonverbal, and then you've got people who are highly intelligent, who can cope with a whole lot of stuff, but there's a whole bunch of things that they can't cope with. And, you know, and sometimes having them in a workplace, you know, for other people have to be more mindful of that. And I think it's something that a lot of people would know somebody who's got a family member whose kids or, you know, adult children would be on the spectrum.
What was the name again, please? Growing Into Autism with Sandra
Jones.
All right.
Yeah, so she's had a great career and, you know, husband and kids and supporting friends and workplaces. But, you know, there are still some things that aren't easy at all. And, you know, as I said, people on the spectrum have all got different skills and abilities, and what some people can do easily, others can't do at all, and some of them find it hard to get work.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with more.
Somehow it seems my thoughts ever stray.
that's just a quick reminder that Choice Tunes is coming up after the 2 o'clock news. Cindy, you want to talk? Oh, no, you would like to talk about the Lions first.
Well, I was just commenting on the music of choice there, Alan.
Well,
a moment ago. Now, just finalising our discussions around organ donation and tissue donation, I wanted to give a shout out to the Lions Club, because one of the big projects for the Lions Club is their Lion's Eye project.
Yes.
Which is about you know, helping people with the corneas and transplants, and they get involved in some of the deliveries. And we've got another group in Australia, I think it was modelled on an American group called Blood Bikers, and they also move blood around voluntarily, so to, you know, to help out with some of these sorts of things. So, you know, even though this is very specialised medical stuff that goes on, volunteers are everywhere. We talked about them with the CFA, and I just wanted to give the Lions Club a shout out, because, you know, sometimes some of the work that the service organisations do gets a little bit lost.
Well, and they don't brag about it either.
Yeah, but I know they're very proud of it, and it's, you know, particularly good.
Wisburn Park Master Plan. You'd like to quickly mention that.
Well, look, the council adopted their master plan for Wisburn Park at the end of last year, actually. It was 7 months or so ago. I think it was in December. And, you know, they're getting a move on that. Now, there's a whole bunch of things that would be associated with it, but one of the things that they've got is a pump track. And, you know, you might wonder what a pump track.
I wonder what a pump. Well, you've got me.
I've seen some really great little pump tracks around, and they're kind of kids' bike areas. And I've seen one, I know with the Mountain Bike Destination Program, you know, they were looking at what's happening in Derby in Tasmania. And when I was there, I saw this really cool little pump track, which is on a, how big, you know, several netball courts, maybe four netball courts maybe a little bit more. And they'll have, you know, little, it's softish, but little bumps and humps and different things for kids to do. And we were watching kids for hours on the pump track down. Well, we weren't watching for hours, but they'd been there for a long time. And, you know, if little kids couldn't get up the hills, you know, the parent would hold their hand and give them a push along and get them moving again. But it's all, you know, great stuff for activities for kids.
Get them outside.
Get them outside off the gear. So that's about to start. The council put out something at last month in June, a few weeks ago, about the work's about to start on the Wisburn pump track. There'll be a little bit of disruption down there, but I think that'll be a really great outcome for the community. Yeah, you look, the kids have been so lucky out here with bike tracks and, you know, on the flat with the rail trail and up the O'Shaughnessy Trail, although the bridge is still out and the government haven't given them money to fix it. But, you know, having something like this little BMX or a bit bigger bike track, you know, it's good for the little kids to start to get involved, and we need them out and about.
And get some fresh air into their little lungs and keep them going. Cindy, unfortunately, time's
flies.
It certainly goes very quickly. Thank you for coming in again today.
Pleasure.
We wish you well in whatever's coming up in the month, and we'll love to hear what the outcome of the this inquiry into
It's got another 8 months.
All right. Thanks very much, Cindy.
Thanks.
Bye.